Pengo didn't enjoy his anonymity for very long. Within a few days, rumors about who was involved in the espionage ring began to circulate furiously through the press and in various hacking circles. Val Holland, Chaos's founder and keeper of the Ethical Flame, was beside himself with anger. If it was true that Pengo was involved, it was an unforgivable betrayal of hacking in general and Chaos in particular. Val's first impulse was not to believe such a thing could have happened, and certainly not that Pengo could have done it. He had always considered Pengo somewhat naive, but certainly not capable of doing something so unconscionable. It wasn't so much the selling of software to the Soviets that bothered him, but that the hackers might have been selling software that came from Chaos people. Worse, they had no doubt been informing on Chaos and its members to West German intelligence agencies. In Weil's estimation, both of those transgressions were far worse than what they were being charged with. To see for himself, he called Pengo in Berlin. "Just say yes or no," Vau said when Pengo answered his telephone. "Is it safe to talk?" "Yes." "Is it true what's being said about you?" was Vau's next question. "Yes." "That's all I wanted to know." And with that, Vau ended the conversation. It took just a few days for true names to start surfacing to the general public. A few days after the Panorama show, Der Spiegel, the Federal Republic's largest serious news magazine, identified Hess and Hagbard by their real names. In a second article in the same magazine the following week, everyone's name came out. Then, more gradually, the fact of Pengo's and Hagbard's cooperation with the authorities inched its way out as well. Pengo was immediately on the defensive. In response to the uproar over his spying, his betrayal of the others, and his work with the authorities, he submitted a lengthy posting in English to the Risks Forum, an international computer network discussion group about potential hazards of computerized technology. Risks is read by computer scientists and other technical experts throughout the world. Peter Newman, an American computer scientist and the editor of Risks, was so surprised to see the blunt note in English coming over the forum's electronic transom that he decided to publish it. Friday, 10th of March, 1989, 18:09:25 MET DST. From Hans Hübner, Pengo at netcs.smtp. Subject, regarding news from the KGB Wily Hackers. I have been an active member of the NET community for about 2 years now, and I want to explicitly express that my network activities have in no way been connected to any contacts to secret services, be it Western or Eastern ones. On the other hand, it is a fact that when I was younger, I'm 20 years now, there has been a circle of persons which tried to make deals with an Eastern secret service. I have been involved in this. But I hope that I did the right thing by giving the German authorities detailed information about my involvement in the case in summer of 88. For my person, I define myself as a hacker. I acquired most of my knowledge by playing around with computers and operating systems, and yes, many of these systems were private property of organizations that didn't even have the slightest idea that I was using their machines. I think hackers, persons who creatively handle technology and not just see computing as their job, do a service for the computing community in general. It has been pointed out by other people that most of the interesting modern computer concepts have been developed or outlined by people which define themselves as hackers. When I started hacking foreign systems, I was 16 years old. I was just interested in computers, not in the data which had been kept on their disks. As I was going to school at that time, I didn't even have the money to buy an own computer. I enjoyed the lax security of the systems I had access to by using X25 networks. You might point out that I should have been patient and wait until I could go to the university and use their machines. Some of you might understand that waiting was just not the thing I was keen on in those days. Computing had become an addiction for me, and thus I kept hacking. I hope this clears the question why. It was definitely not to get the Russians any advantage over the USA, nor to become rich and get a flight to the Bahamas as soon as possible. For punishment, I already lost my current job, since through the publications of my name in the Spiegel magazine and in Risks, our business partners are getting anxious about me being involved in this case. several projects I was about to realize in the near future have been canceled, which forces me to start again at the beginning in some way. Hans Huebner. It was a fairly bold statement to send out to nearly 30,000 computer scientists, students, and researchers, most of them American, who perused Risk's forum every day. Perhaps Pengo underestimated the number of people who would see his posting. They could hardly be expected to muster much sympathy for the self-confessed spy. Those Risk's regulars who were willing to give Pengo the benefit of the doubt were impressed by his honesty, but the general reaction was one of horror. At best, this was someone who didn't understand what he was getting into, who was naive to the point of stupidity. If someone as unscrupulous and self-serving as this was frequenting the networks, what other dangers might lurk there? Vao, too, wasn't to be swayed very easily by Pengo's defense of his actions. He saw it as self-justification that was curiously lacking in any kind of moral reflection or thought as to how Pengo's cloak-and-dagger adventure might affect others. Vao wanted to divorce himself and his organization entirely from this young troublemaker. He instructed people from the West German hacking scene to hang up the phone if Pengo should call. A joke began to circulate that when Hans chose the sobriquet Pengo for himself, it was to prove more fitting than he knew. Pengo, that is, suggested not just the heroic penguin of the video game, but one who sprang from ice block to ice block, saving himself just as each was about to sink. Pengo's parents, at least, were understanding. Renata, in particular, was quick to excuse her elder son's escapades as an understandable search for adventure. Moreover, both parents suspected that just as their son had always managed as a small child to pull his head out of the noose in the nick of time, somehow he would get out of this tight spot as well. But Renata's septuagenarian mother, whose early life had consisted of a series of unpleasant encounters with East Germany's communist regime, was horrified that her grandson could be doing business with such people. Hagbard came under some sharp criticism as well, but rather than go public with his own defense, he kept to himself and quietly entertained journalists' overtures. His price for an exclusive interview? 30,000 marks, or $15,000. It looked as if Hagbard was beginning to straighten out his life. Before the news of the KGB activity broke, a friend had helped him get a job as a messenger in the Hanover office of the Conservative Christian Democratic Union. It was menial, low-paying work, but by all accounts, he was reliable and well-liked by others in the office. Even after his spying came to light, along with his dependence on drugs, the CDU office kept him on, convinced that he deserved another chance. Some of Hagbard's friends viewed the CDU job as further proof that this erstwhile Social Democrat's political perspective had gone completely awry. Others saw the job as Hagbard's first small step toward folding himself back into society. His life, at least to outsiders, seemed more stable. After years of rootlessness, he was finally planning to move into an apartment of his own, and a recent embrace of conventional religion had probably added to his calm bearing. His fellow workers would hardly have supposed that this quiet young man had been in and out of psychiatric hospitals battling his drug addiction. In reality, Hagbard's life was still a mess. Contrary to appearances, he was still struggling to free himself from drugs. His rent in the new apartment was being paid by the West German authorities, engendering a strange dependence. And being in service to the West German authorities was probably more than someone so invested in paranoid fantasies could withstand. Hagbard was increasingly plagued by the notion that he was under constant surveillance by one or another real or imagined organization, and he was convinced that the officials were reading his mind and using his thoughts to their own end. Perhaps just as difficult for Hagbard was the realization that his commercial value was a direct function of his newsworthiness, which was beginning to wane. Within a month or two of the arrests of the others and the disclosure of the full extent of Hagbard's and Pengo's involvement, the story had lost its sheen, and journalists had all but forgotten the young hacker with the unusual nickname. On the morning of May 23rd, Hagbard set off in the CDU's Volkswagen station wagon to make a delivery to a government office in Hanover, and he didn't return. After lunch, friends went to look for him, and by 4 that afternoon, the Verfassungsschutz had dispatched a search party as well. After a week, the friends abandoned their search. Hagbard was missing for 9 days.